to remember. Stories of people, stories of human dignity and decency, told by some of America's outstanding storytellers. We present Alan Baxter in A Story to Remember, Act of Faith by Irwin Shaw.
Seeger, when you talk to the old man, try to look real sad. Make it good.
Okay, Olson.
Also, tell him about our heroic war record. Oh, you don't have to come right out with it and tell him that we're heroes. Just sort of remind them that we went through from Omaha Beach to, what's the name of that place in Germany?
Konigstein.
That's right, Konigstein.
I'll remind him, but maybe one of you guys would rather talk to him.
Norman Seeger, don't shirk your responsibilities to your pal.
And don't forget to tell him about our medals. Those we got, and you can throw in a few we didn't get.
Okay. If necessary, I'll get down on my knees. I walked into the dank tent. The war was over, and we were stationed in France, waiting shipment home, so Johnny, the company clerk, was reading a book. Captain Taney, the CO, was writing a letter to his wife. He was a small, fussy man with thinning, sandy hair. While the fighting had been going on, he was tense, tough, and full of cold authority. He was a natural soldier, tireless, aggressive, and anxious to kill Nazis. But since the end of the war, he'd begun to relapse pleasantly into the small-town hardware merchant he'd been before the war. He'd even begun to appear shy. As I said, he was writing a letter. He finished his sentence and looked up at me.
Oh, hello, Seeger. What's on your mind?
Well, if I'm disturbing you, sir, I'll come back later.
Oh, you aren't. I'm just writing a letter to my wife. Are you married, Seeger?
No, sir.
Yeah, my wife complains I don't tell her I love her often enough.
No.
I thought you were going to Paris. I signed the passes yesterday.
Well, that's what I wanted to see you about, sir.
Anything wrong with the passes?
Oh, no, they're fine. It's just that, well...
Is this confidential?
Yes, sir, if you don't mind.
Uh-huh. Johnny?
Yes, sir?
Go stand the rain someplace.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Seeger.
Well, it's hard to talk about it, sir, but it's about money.
I know. I'd like to take every chair-warming lady in the finance department and wring his neck.
Well, it wouldn't be so bad, but we're going to Paris tomorrow, Olson, Welsh, and myself. You might as well be dead in Paris without money.
Mm.
Sir, the truth is I've come to borrow some money for Olson, Welsh, and myself. Well, look, if you don't want to give it to us, just tell me, and I'll understand and get out of here.
Stay where you are, son. Let's see how many francs I have. One... 400 paper francs. That's $8.
Sorry, I shouldn't have asked.
Delighted you did. Absolutely delighted. Here's half of it. 200 francs.
No, Captain, I can't take it.
Take it. That's an order.
Thank you, sir. Sometime when this is over, sir, you'll have to come over to my house and we'll go out on a real evening.
I regard that as a solemn commitment. Goodbye, sir.
Bye, sir. When I stepped outside, the rain was coming down in a very businesslike fashion. The sky had grown darker. Across the street stood Olson and Welsh, paying no attention to the rain pouring down on them. They quickly fell into step with me.
Well, how'd we do?
200 francs.
Why, that miserable penny-loving...
Take it easy. You only had 400.
Okay. We revise our opinion.
Wonder how much the French would give me for my combat jacket.
Ah, forget it. I know where we can put our hands on 65 bucks.
You know, I'll kill you, Welsh, if you're kidding.
I was talking to a captain in the Air Force this morning. A little fat old paddle-footed captain that never got higher off the ground than the second floor of ComZ headquarters. He owned up that he would admire to take home a nice shiny Luger.
Oh, 65 bucks for a Luger is a very good figure.
They've been selling as low as 35. I'll bet you could sell your Luger now and buy another one back when you have the dough and make a clear 25 bucks on the deal.
Maybe.
Anyway, I told the fat old captain I'd see him tonight around 9 o'clock. You got 5 hours, Seeger. Plenty of time, hasn't he, Olson?
Oh, me, I wouldn't say a word. I'm just going to think about that fat Air Force captain.
Oh, I nearly forgot. I picked up a letter for you, Seeger, from your father.
Olson and Welsh were stretched out in the cots in our tent waiting for me to read the letter. Waiting for me to make up my mind about the Luger. This gun was something special. I took it from a big Nazi major under very difficult circumstances. I had a gun duel with him behind some bales of paper in a warehouse in Germany. He fired at me 3 times, nicking my helmet twice before I got him. I'd received several offers for this gun, $80, $90, and once someone even offered me $100 for it. I thought about that gun as I opened my father's letter. It was written on the familiar university stationery. I began to read mechanically. Dear Norman, you must forgive me for writing this kind of letter. I've been holding this back too long. I stopped reading mechanically and with a feeling of alarm began to pay close attention. My father was a university professor, a calm, reserved man, and he never wrote like this.
There's no one here to talk to. Your mother has never been the same since your brother Leonard was killed. And I have to be optimistic and cheerful all the time I'm home, but that isn't all. I've spared you this letter until now that the war is over. I have to tell you because I can't stand up under this alone. And you'll have to face it when you get home. It concerns your brother Jacob. You know he got a medical discharge from the army because of a severe leg wound. But I know better. It wasn't because of the leg, it was combat fatigue. Since he's been home, he's been suffering from fits of depression, hallucinations, and he's not getting better, he's getting worse. Last Sunday morning, I found him in his old uniform, crouched near the window, peering out.
Shh! Don't make a sound.
Jacob, what's the matter with you?
I'm observing V1s and V2s. Buzz bombs and rockets. They're coming by the hundreds.
Please, Jacob, don't let your mother hear you like this.
Get down, Dad. Flying glass. You'll get all cut up. Get down!
All right, Jacob, but you're in America, in Ohio, 4,000 miles away from Germany.
You don't understand. These are new rocket bombs. For the Jews. For us.
That's how he was. Then he stood up and took the Bronze Star medal off his chest and threw it in the fireplace. He began to walk up and down in the room fast and nervously.
What's the situation, Dad? What's the situation? I'm not worried about myself. I'm a soldier. But you and Mom, you're defenseless. My Bronze Star, help me find it. I need it when they come for me. Oh, here it is, Dad. Here, pin it on me. Pin it on me, Dad.
That's how it is with Jacob. Sometimes he is his old, cheerful self, but only sometimes. Once I found him weeping when the newspapers reported the Jews were still being jailed.
Hey, Welsh, if we don't get that $65, we can go to the Louvre.
If it's free, I'll go.
We have a choice. We can also go to the Pantheon.
If it's free, I'll go.
There was more to the letter. I wanted to be alone. It stopped raining, so I walked outside into the muddy, soaked fields.
Perhaps Jacob is the normal one, and I, going about my business quietly teaching economics at the university, am the mad one. I don't see rockets and bombs, but I see other things. In hotels, trains, clubs, you seem to hear talk, mean, hateful, murderous talk. Every day you read where Jews are being killed someplace in the world, and there are columnists, influential, respectable men who make snide attacks and daily become more and more outspoken. 3 months ago, I stopped my Thursday night card games after playing with the same men for 10 years. It was something Joe Riley said.
The fact is, it's the Jews who got rich out of this war. I know several of them personally, and I remember...
I demanded an apology from him, but he refused. And the rest of the men who had been my friends for years were with him, not with me. They didn't say goodnight when I left. Germany was defeated, but the Nazi poison was still spreading. I hadn't realized it had come so close. It had even affected me. I began to feel distressed when I saw an article written by a Jew attacking existing abuses, or when I read about Jews fighting for the oppressed and hungry. Yes, I felt angry with the Jews for disturbing the world by being killed and crying out because they're hungry and dispossessed. This is the feeling I have in a country where my family has lived for 100 years. This is how I feel today. You're young. You've been at war. You've fought and killed men. You've seen the people of other countries. Maybe you understand things better than I. Maybe you see some hope somewhere. Help me. Your loving father.
I folded the letter carefully. Through my head kept running my brother Jacob's words.
These are the rocket bombs for the Jews. These are the rocket bombs for the Jews. For us.
But I thought maybe my father was one of those people wheeling his Jewishness around like some delicate invalid. Maybe he was the kind of person who saw a sign against the Jews in every smile on the street, every whisper, who sees pogroms in every news article, scorn in every handshake. But I wasn't like that. People always liked me. I was like the guys I played football with, guys alongside of me on the line, Johnson, Poole, Moran. The Jews burning in the Nazi furnaces, the Jews being pushed naked into the gas chambers had been unreal to me, like they'd been to Johnson, Poole, and Moran. But when I got to Europe, they got a little closer to me. Again and again in the towns taken back from the Germans, gaunt, gray-faced men would stop me, asking me the same questions in many languages.
Et vous juif?
Du bist Aïd?
Are you a Jew?
The only language I knew was English, but I got to recognize that question. They never really wanted anything from me. They just asked the question. Except one of them, a thin, bent old man who turned to his wife when I told him.
Look, a young American soldier, a Jew, tall and strong with a beautiful rifle, just like the others are carrying.
Just like the others are carrying and marching with them together.
And then I understood why, when I'd killed that Nazi major, I'd tasted an extra flavor of triumph. It was fitting and just that I should have killed him. And I'd resolved to take his Luger home with me, plug it, and keep it on my desk to remind me that I'd once been an instrument of justice. But maybe my father was right. Maybe I'd better not plug that Luger, but take it home loaded. What did I know about America? Maybe there'd be mobs coming down the street to my house.
Hey, Seeger, what are you doing out here, standing in the mud?
Just wanted to read my letter.
Bad news?
Oh, nothing much.
Seeger, we've been talking it over, Olson and I, and you're pretty attached to that Luger, and we thought that, well, if...
What Welsh is trying to say is that we withdraw the request. If you want to sell it, okay. But don't do it for our sake. Honest.
I thought of my father, and my brother Leonard, who was dead, and my brother Jacob crouching in front of a window waiting for the rockets and the mob. And I looked at Olson and Welsh, dependable, tough, familiar. I remembered the time in Cherbourg when I was caught going down a street by four Germans with a machine gun on the second floor of a corner house. Olson had stood out in the middle of the street with no cover at all for more than a minute, firing continuously so that I could get away alive. The fact that I was Jewish had made no difference then. I remembered the night at St. Lo when I was wounded and Welsh and Captain Taney had crawled through the minefield in the dark to find me and carry me back. Being Jewish hadn't made any difference then, either. And I thought of all the drinks we'd had together, and the long marches, and the cold winters, the good times, and the bad.
Look, Seeger, anything you decide is all right with us. Perfectly all right.
Welsh, what time did you tell that captain you'd meet him tonight?
9:00. But we don't have to go. I know how you feel about that gun.
We'll meet him. We can use the $65.
Oh, I know how much you're attached to that, Luger. I'd feel like a heel if you sold it.
Forget it. What use would I have for a gun in America? Come on, we're going to Paris together.
Stories to Remember is a Lest We Forget presentation of the Institute for Democratic Education. It is offered as a reminder of America's promise of equal opportunity for all, regardless of creed, color, or national origin. Alan Baxter was starred in today's story, Act of Faith, by Irwin Shaw, originally published in the New Yorker magazine. It was adapted for radio by Sigmund Miller, directed by Earl McGill, and produced by Harold Franklin. Listen in again next week at this same time for another Story to Remember.